now recording. This is Out Now with Aaron and Abe. I am Aaron, as always. This is
Abe. How are you, Aaron? This is me with my southern accent.
That's great. I'm happy to hear your southern accent.
Yeah.
This is my professional accent. This is how I talk when I want to do business with you. Would you like to do business? Yeah. I'm good.
Glad to hear.
You good?
I'm great.
All right. Well, Out Now is a film podcast where Amy and I discuss new movies weekly. However, we also like to have these special bonus episodes. And this is another bonus review episode. We're going to talk Hitman, the latest film from director Richard Linklater, which has gone pretty much right to Netflix. It has a small theatrical release. And if you can see it in theaters, cool. But otherwise, you're largely going to be seeing this movie on Netflix. But yeah, we're going to talk about Hitman. Before we do that, let's get some other stuff. Quick show notes real quick. We have new commentaries coming. I want to mention now because we're going to record one tomorrow or two days from now, the time of this recording, for Run Lola Run, which is celebrating its 25th anniversary and is actually in theaters right now. In select theaters, it's playing again, which is actually pretty cool. We have a commentary that times up pretty well with a theatrical re-release of the movie. Why we're doing that is because we're doing an international commentary series for the next few months here. We're going to talk Run Lola Run, and then we're going to do Chungking Express, celebrating its 30th anniversary, and then Kiki's Delivery Service, celebrating its 35th anniversary. So we're going all over the globe to talk about movies commentary tracks this summer. So stay tuned for all that. So, yeah. Also, how about some Out of Quickies?
Trademark.
Trademark. So I got a few more things I want to mention here.
Yes.
These are all docs.
Oh, great. Yeah. One of my favorite genres. Yeah.
I watched Jim Henson Idea
Man. Oh, nice.
This is the new documentary on Disney Plus, focused on, of course, Jim Henson, creator of The Muppets and Sesame Street and Dark Crystal and The Labyrinth and all that. You know, famed imagination man slash, you know, TV producer slash filmmaker, what have you, beloved by society.
Yes.
And this is the doc that ruins it. No, it's not. This is directed by Ron Howard. I'll point that out. And I note that because these docs that have been coming out on like Disney Plus and other things, my main issue tends to be that they feel kind of soft. They don't really delve in as deeply as they could, you know, for the sake of, you know, propping up somebody that already is propped up in life in general. So it's like, okay, what do we really get out of it? Mm-hmm. What I like about this, it's not that Jim Henson has some crazy dark side or there's some real truth or anything I need to get to. In all case, it seems like he was generally a nice person.
Sure.
Who, you know, had issues like any human does, as far as he was very focused on his work. So his family life didn't get as much attention, ultimately why his marriage fails. And then he dies pretty early on, which is a shame. And also the movie actually gets into why. It's because he's a workaholic and he didn't take care of himself in the way that he should during a time when he should have. But it still is a very honest documentary, you know, not just because you're a good person doesn't mean there's not, you know, drama to get into or what have you. And it does that to a certain point. Obviously, it's also very heartwarming because you're seeing this man and his early life and how he came to create Kermit and, you know, all these things.
Right.
The early TV stuff, as far as things that don't seem very Muppety at all, except, you know, the idea that it's a puppet of some kind. You see his formation of the friendship of Frank Oz, who's featured in this doc, of many people. There's many people featured in this documentary because when you have Ron Howard, you have access to a lot of people. It's a good documentary. It's better than other ones that I've seen of similar nature. It just has the right kind of feel to it as far as how to like express what a contribution Jim Henson made to the culture. And it's certainly worthwhile. It's almost 2 hours. But it's not like it doesn't feel long. It's just like, oh, this is nice to see. So I certainly recommend it. Jim Henson, Idea Man.
Yeah, I'm glad.
I watched Movie Pass, Movie Crash.
Okay, on HBO.
On Max. This is a documentary going over. That's right, Movie Pass. How would you call it? The theater subscription service. That had a, you know, it was a.
Everything we have today.
Pretty much, yeah. Like, very much so. What's fascinating about this is how you see where this company came. You get to see the inside story of where this all is. And you see like where this company came from versus what changed it significantly and what ultimately imploded it. Abe, you had did you have MoviePass?
Like before, I did. Yeah, I was one of the really early people
before it became the $9.99 thing. Right,
that's correct. Yeah, when it was like kind of like a really secret internet thing, where it's like, hey, did you know that this company is allowing you to watch movies at any theater for a subscription price of like, you know, it was like $20 or it was probably less than that. It was like $10 per month or something like that. And yeah,
so it was more. That was the whole point. It was more than that.
It was like 20, probably something. It was something that was like still pretty like doable. And then it blew up. Yeah, it just became a super popular thing.
So this doc obviously gets to what happened exactly. And so you hear from most of the people, except the ones that are, you know, currently facing trials and jail time, their activities. But you have the founders, Stacy Spikes and Hamit Watt. And I mean, there's not much of another way to say it, even though I'm still speaking somewhat broadly, but you have two black entrepreneurs that created a company that was successful enough that it was able to expand, only to have white businessmen who had a record of tanking businesses come in, vote off the black creators of the company out of the board and out of pretty much everything, take it over, do this insane thing where they lowered the cost to $10 a month, which was huge at the time and made like there's a logic to it that makes sense if you have a follow through. But they didn't have a follow through. What they had was these stocks look great. Let's keep this going as long as the stocks look great. And inevitably, it blew up in their face. There's other things that go into that. And there's reasons as to why these newer board members are currently facing significant trials that they have to deal with. But it's really pretty interesting.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that.
I wish the doc was a little better. It's very talky. Not a deal breaker, but because especially as a documentary. But it's talky in a way where there's not a lot else to do beyond just showing you people saying stuff. With addition of there's a lot of movie clips. That kind of are juxtaposed
like from movies, like from film,
from film. Yeah, they're juxtaposed with like things that people are saying at the time. So like it thematically connects to why you're seeing a clip, which is like it's a fun way to be like, hey, we like movies, and this is a way to show that. It's an hour and a half, and it's again the information you're getting out of this, I think, is pretty fascinating because it is it is neat to like learn what happened. Like I know you were on MoviePass. I got it when it became the $10 thing.
Yeah,
and that was like 2017, and boy, what a time to be alive.
What a time to be alive, yeah.
And, there's a lot of interesting stats that come out of that, where this doc doesn't necessarily get into it, but people were seeing movies. Like, you know, it is a whole different topic, but we talk a lot about, you know, audiences and what movies are seeing or what they're choosing to go to and why or what have you. MoviePass is a pretty cool example of people are not against going to see movies. It's a matter of, you know, act like having the ability to and cost. And if you present something where it's $10 a month to see whatever they want to, they're more willing to explore. So they could see the giant blockbuster and also go see, for example, an I Saw the TV Glow, something they probably normally would not see. They would wait till.
Hey, don't we have a bonus episode for that?
We do, actually. We do have a bonus episode on that. But,
what a plug. Like,
but you can look at some of the data from that time and see things like, what was that? The Mr. Rogers documentary. That movie made a lot of money for that time.
Yeah,
and that's not a film that would normally make that kind of money, but because MoviePass was around at that time, it's not really surprising that something like that would do far better than it would have because people took more chances at that point.
Yeah, and I haven't seen the doc, but I want to say two things. One of them is that, it sounds like HBO still knows how to make better docs than Netflix, which is good.
Sure.
The second thing is like, speaking of my experience with MoviePass, again, I remember it being super cool, kind of top secret, and kind of only like, you know, Silicon Valley tech nerds kind of knew about it because it's not that it originated in the Bay, but more of just it was a very secret thing. And it became such a popular thing that movie theaters were like, no, we're going to object to allowing you to use MoviePass here. There would be signs in the window that said no MoviePass allowed because they just weren't getting some sort of like kickback or some sort of profit. And then this kind of leads into what we have today, which is like A-List. Cinemark has their own club membership. And then I don't know if Regal does.
Regal
too,
does because right? I have. That's what
so I like
have.
Everybody has like their own membership status thing now where you can watch, you know, 1 to 3 movies or whatever per week for a subscription price. But yeah, I agree with you in large part that access is a very key thing to things, like whether this be like food, healthy foods, or to movies, where if you could watch as many movies as you want for like $10 a month. That is an incredible thing to do, you know, and this is sort of like the, I think the arguments that Tarantino has about movies today is just like they're very expensive. And they used to be, you know, a cheaper alternative to like Broadway shows, but now they're pretty expensive for you to take a family of four out to go to the movie theater these days.
With the, like, along with that, things like minimum wage not increasing for a long period of time reflects that. Like, you can't have movie theater prices go up, a thing that's supposed to be casual, like you just said, and not increase the general living wage people are making. It's like, there's a lot of economics of all of this, but it is, I do find it all pretty fascinating.
Right.
But the doc itself, MoviePass, MovieCrash, it's good. I recommend it for sure.
I'm glad to hear. Yeah. I guess I've seen it pop up and I was like, I don't know, how good can this be? But I probably should never question HBO.
Yeah. Well, it's not TV. It's HBO. I watched the documentary Flip Side, which friend of the show Luke Thompson recommended last 2 weeks ago on this show. Was it that long ago? Jeez, we do this show.
We do a lot.
Yeah. We do a lot of shows, guys.
This is a free show for 13 years.
It's like that. I felt like that just happened. But this is a good doc. It's from director Christopher Welch. You can listen back to the Furiosa episode to hear more about Flip Side of what Luke thought of it, but I like it quite a bit. It's like one of his favorite movies of the year. I think it's quite good. It's about this. It's about the director Christopher Welch, who like it. It's a mix of like on the outside you can say it's about him trying to save a record store. There's also just other docs that he's worked on that he just kind of gave up on. And so the doc gets into him dealing with his own kind of midlife crisis as to why he's not finishing the stuff that he's working on.
It's fascinating.
It is pretty fascinating. It's also very funny. It has a very good comedic edge to it. So it's not just like this drama about some random white guy. Like you're actually getting something out of it that's worthwhile. And I could see why I would get the sort of phrase that it has, because it has an interesting take on how to do more than just what your general premise suggests. So I'd say it's a worthwhile watch. Flip Side. Okay. I think it's like on, it's it might be on demand at some point soon, but it's a good one. It's a good one to look out for.
Glad to hear.
The last thing I watched was Black Twitter, A People's History on Hulu.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
This is a 3-episode documentary.
I only know this because Jemele Hill has been tweeting about it.
Yeah. As he's one of the many people featured along with like W. Kamau Bell. I was thinking of Tim. That's why I have one T. reading the next name. A lot of like notable online figures, political commentators or what have you. It basically delves into the history of Twitter from the Black point of view. And we talk about things like film Twitter and what have you. Black Twitter is a very specific thing as far as a culture and how they utilize Twitter to call things out. And the doc gets into kind of the influence that it has had on a pretty large scale, and what kind of major events that has tapped into, all leading up to Elon Musk eventually buying Twitter. It's 3 episodes, as I mentioned. It's very funny. It has a lot of like, you know, I just mentioned that like MoviePass, MovieCrash, it's a very plain doc. It's a lot of talking, what have you.
Yeah, yeah.
This has a lot of like production design, which I found to be pretty interesting. Like it has a lot of like the guests are all in varying settings that have like a lot of color in them, or they're at like dinner table sets, or there's just like a lot of like effort going into how do you dress up the interviews that we're seeing.
Okay.
So it's like, it's a well-produced documentary, and making it like even more worthwhile just because you get more, you know, along with like what I found to be just interesting information, as far as the kind of reflection on Twitter and the certain audience and like what it's getting after. It's just a good looking doc. Like it does the work. So yeah, I enjoyed it. You know, three episodes.
Where did you watch this again?
It is on Hulu.
Hulu. Okay.
It's 3 episodes. They're all like 45 minutes. Yeah. It's that's what I was looking for. It's directed by Prentice Prenny, who is a big part of Insecure, the Issa Rae show, but also directed that movie Uncorked. Remember that movie?
The pandemic movie.
It was a pandemic release on Netflix with what's his name? Mata,
who's since become a pretty big star.
Mamadou Ati. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's like, he wants to be what, a wine a sommelier. Sommelier, and his dad owns like a barbecue joint.
That's right.
But yeah, it's that director. He put together this documentary. Yeah, it's a good watch. It's very entertaining. Yeah. So yeah, that's a duck piece.
Trademark.
Okay, let's get into it. Let's get into our main review now for Hitman.
No, I don't buy it.
What?
You're not a hitman. You can't be. I tried looking you up and nothing. It's like you don't even exist.
I guess I'm just your fantasy.
So what's the biggest difference between the real you and your occupation?
By the way, my name is Gary Johnson, and I'm a fake hitman. I realized not everyone fantasized about the same hitman. Every sting operation was a performance.
This is serious. I am in service business.
And each arrest was like a standing ovation.
Okay, Daniel Day.
I had it down to a science.
Sounds lovely.
Until things got, well,
Ron,
complicated.
Madison.
That should have been the trailer for Hitman. This is the latest film for director Richard Linklater, based on a story by him and star Glenn Powell. I'll read this brief Google synopsis that I found here. It writes, this is hilarious, actually. It writes, professional killer Gary Johnson breaks protocol to help a desperate woman trying to flee an abusive husband and finds himself falling for her. Now,
there's a lot of things in that statement
that are incorrect
that we'll go into in full details. Spoilers later.
It's not even a spoiler. I mean, it's like that's just flat out wrong.
That's true. Yeah. Who wrote that? AI?
I guess.
All right.
Google. John Googleson, who writes everything John on Google. Googleson. As we all know, he writes everything on Google.
Yeah.
The story itself, I will just to clarify, uh-huh. Glenn Powell plays Gary Johnson, who is a college professor who moonlights as a guy that basically like a tech guy for the police in New Orleans. Yeah. And eventually he's bumped up to like going out like in the field to pose as a hitman who can then convince people that he's going to do this job for them, and they will make an agreement, give him money, and then they are arrested because it's actually a sting operation and they're capturing people before they, you know, go through some kind of heinous crime. Yeah. During this time, yes, he falls for one of the people that potentially could set up something.
Mm-hmm.
So with all that in mind, Hitman, Richard Linklater, Glenn Powell, Adria Arjona, Abe, what'd you think of this movie?
I thought this movie was actually really good. This movie is entertaining on multiple fronts, especially whether it's visually or when they're some of the writing is like really top notch. And I'm thinking specifically like a scene in like the late second, third act where things kind of become unraveled and unrevealed. Like this is an stellar writing and also craft work from an acting standpoint. I think that Glenn Powell is really good in here playing different versions of himself to some degree, but also I think that Linklater still fits in his wheelhouse. Linklater is known as like a very authentic is the term I would use, an authentic director, one that kind of tries to get across real feelings of people, of like ordinary people. Like not everything has to be wildly like, you know, superhero-ish or wildly like super spy-ish. And this movie does take a lot of like creative liberties on this person, which is later explained in a post-credit like on montage. But still, I think that Linklater has a really strange but he has a really cool fascination with how to tell these normal stories of these normal people. I have never heard of Gary Johnson. I don't know of the article in which this whole entire movie is based on, but I love that it's about this guy, like what you described, who is a college professor that just decided to like one day just be like, I guess I'm really good at being these characters and trying to get these confessions from people that want to kill somebody, their spouse, their partner, a business partner, whoever. I think like what I love about this is like the whole movie is always around circling around a very common thread, like what we had in our previous bonus episode of like identity, right? So who are you? Who do you choose to be? Who do you want to be? Is that actually who you are instead? And what happens if you actually like gave into those things? You know, there's like a very fascinating approach that Gary Johnson kind of has at one point where he's talking about the id, the ego, and the superego. And that's basically this entire movie. So again, very entertaining, well acted, a lot of laughs, but also when the laughs aren't there, yes, I can feel some of like the lulls, but I think what I'm watching on the screen here, this is like, I should caveat, I watched this in the theater. I was able to find this. Yeah, I was able to find this and watch this with an audience, and we had a great time. There were like a lot of like really fun things that we all laughed at, but also we all kind of like, you know, shared a common wink at each other about some things that we saw on the screen. So I thought it was a really fun time.
I shall note that you mentioned that it's based on a magazine article. It's by Skip Hollandsworth. Mm-hmm. He also wrote the article that the film Bernie is based on, and also Richard Linklater.
This makes a lot of sense now. Yeah.
And I also saw this in the theater. I specifically requested from the press person to like get a screening and not a screener, because all I've heard is that this is just a great crowd pleaser. And so I wanted to like see it with a crowd as opposed to watching it on Netflix for the first time. And I agree with you. I think this movie's great. It's super fun. It's annoying that it is on Netflix. Like, and I can see reasons and whatnot that delve into the state of the world, what have you, as far as what people are going to see. But this is such a great like adult comedy that has all kinds of elements that would just, in, you know, a different time, this would just be a solid hit. Like, sure, you know, not breaking the bank necessarily, but one that just people would walk out of thinking, I got to tell everybody about this. Is a lot of fun. This movie does that job. It's so much, there's so much enjoyable stuff happening here as far as these performances and the comedy and the way it functions as a thriller without really being that thrilling. Like, it has a lot of just good stuff in it. And yeah, on top of that, it delves into some ideas that I appreciate as far as identity goes, with Gary being a psychology and philosophy professor. Like, it's neat to see how, like, it's fun seeing Linklater like not being able to help himself as far as being able to go deeper with a film like this that could easily just be the kind of, I don't want to say shallow, but, you know, a fairly simplistic story as far as, okay, he posed as a hitman, he's not really a hitman, where do we go from there?
Sure.
On the surface, that could be pretty easy to, like, do, you know, make that work, has, you know, varying levels of conflict or what have you. But Linklater, he's a very good director and writer, and he has more on his mind than that, and he knows how to run with it. So there's extra content here where when you watch this again, or even, you know, the first time, when you just think about this movie, there's a lot to chew on, a lot more than one may expect, based on just the premise alone. And I very much appreciate that. I walked out of this movie like having a lot of thoughts and different ideas and what have you about what Glenn Powell's character, what he was going through and what this all led to, and having questions about what's her name? Madison. Yeah. And just different ideas about what was going on with all this. Like, there's just enough there that kept me going beyond just the surface level. Like, this is super fun. And that said, there's nothing wrong with that. Like, it is super fun. Like, it's very fun. There's great chemistry between Powell and Arjona. Like, it's great. Like, I had a great time with this movie.
I think that actually is very fascinating that Netflix has two movies about hitmen that came out like this in close proximity to each other. This and the Fincher movie. Just pretty cool. I want to hear your thoughts on the Glenn Powell character. Expand on that.
You know, he gets into this whole thing with his class about can a person change who they are or whatever. Or like, and with his like ex-girlfriend. Is that what it is?
That's his ex-wife. Yeah.
His ex-wife.
Yeah.
And they have like an extended discussion in a very Linklater way, as far as we're just watching them talk for a good long time. There's another one scene with Madison where they're like outside of a club or something, where they're just talking for a long period of time. It's like, this is the good stuff. This is Linklater just doing his thing. But he's, look at him, just letting that camera go.
These lines were ad-libbed.
Like, you know, reflecting on seeing Gary do the various characters he has to play, and we'll talk about that in a second.
Yeah.
Versus him like having an honest discussion about the idea of, you know, can a personality just be different all of a sudden? Like, the idea of the film like wanting to head on address that, like have both the most exaggerated version of that by having him dress as fucking Tilda Swinton or whatever, and then and then doubling back and having like a more, you know, focused conversation about that idea. I just found that like just good stuff to chew on. It was just like, it was just enjoyable. And seeing Glenn Powell here, who I've enjoyed quite a bit in various things, seeing him just, you know, be the lead of this thing and like, you know, and knowing that he had a, you know, a hand on the screenplay, it's like, good for him. I like that there's more going on here. That I'm sure will be reflected in Twisters as well.
Yeah, definitely was pleasantly surprised when he got a screenplay credit for this too. Linklater and here are both the credited writers for this movie. But yeah, exactly what you're saying there, like my comment about the super ego id stuff, and mm-hmm. the way that this movie basically is framed around lectures that Gary Johnson is giving to his class is very fascinating. You know, like I think that in other movies this could be viewed as like preachy, and I think in other movies they would actually make it preachy, where yeah. they would kind of like really tip their nose and cap at the end there, just like, see, like, you see how the superego took over kind of thing. It's like, no, that's not what this movie is actually trying to like go for here. I think this movie is like cleverly disguising itself again. It's cleverly disguising itself in a way that allows you to live out these fantasies, but also that this happens to everybody. Meaning, like, you and I both probably still have fantasies around, like, hey, like, it'd be cool if, like, I could turn invisible or whatever the fuck, you know what I mean? Like, we all are all trying to, like, we all don't just, like, think about work all the time or think about, you know, what we have to pick up at the supermarket all the time. Like, we're all having, like, daydreams and we're all kind of, like, having our own dreams. Like, this is a really fascinating read on, like, somebody who actually just decides to, like, live it out. And they ham it up even more, which actually makes it even funnier than what it is. But still, I really dig that about the Linklaterness of all this, which is just ordinary people that do maybe not extraordinary things, but they're just willing to go beyond what maybe they are expected to do. And look what happens when you do. Like, your life might become more exciting or it might become more dangerous, but also at the same time, you know, you'll never know if you never get to that boundary.
And the way he blends this, you know, the Ron character is a character who
is the hitman character.
One of the hitman characters, but also the one that Madison, the woman he falls yeah. for, like, that's the one that she believes he is with. And so seeing as the movie progresses, Gary inhabit Ron more as far as his confidence goes and the way he dresses and things. It's like mm-hmm. the movie's, you know, it's not hiding this stuff, but it's like, it's still neat to see. It's neat to yeah. see, like, this guy who we have a very specific impression of by the beginning of the film, you know, halfway through, we get an understanding that it's not just necessarily a mask he's putting on, but in fact, there's something there infecting his life or changing his life for perhaps the better. Mm-hmm. That just makes the film all that more interesting.
Yeah. I want to say on Colin Powell. But I want to say on Glenn Powell for a second. Colin Powell is a U.S. politician and military general. Glenn Powell, again, I think you and I have enjoyed his presence on the screen, whether it be Top Gun Maverick or anything else that he's done since. And this guy is clearly a star. I kind of mentioned this in our Summer Gamble thing where I was like, yeah, it's cool to see Glenn Powell literally become like a superstar, like on the screen. And that's why I'm not like crazy. I wasn't crazy excited for this movie with where he's pretending to be a boyfriend to the, I forget her name, Sydney Sweeney. But then I'm excited for Twister to come out, because I think the more people will see Glenn Powell here, it's more just like, yeah, this guy is, he's got it. He's got the charisma. He's got the charm. He's got the looks. And I know that recently he kind of just was, it was noted that Tom Cruise gave him a ton of advice over at when they were filming Top Gun Maverick, but also that he kind of just continues to get a ton of advice from like Denzel Washington. And I was like, this guy is getting like the inside the actor studio school from like Hollywood, you know, blue chippers, and he's playing his hand so well. And I'm really just like excited for people to be like, Glenn Powell is a fucking, he's the guy. And his chemistry with Adriana Arjona, fucking incredible. Like, it really works. And so I dug that he's able to play this Ron character that is a huge, like, he's not a narcissist, but he's like, he's very different from Gary Johnson.
He's cool.
Yeah, he's cool. Exactly. Like, it's almost like he turned into like that. That he turned into Stefan Urkel.
He's Buddy Love.
Exactly. Yeah. Literally, like, to some degree. Yeah. But
hey, he beats up Dave Chappelle.
Those are shit locks, Reggie. But I dug that Glenn Powell's really like, he's really able to portray both of those in really good fashions throughout the movie. And it's just, I was like, well, Gary Johnson is very boring. Like, I don't know if Glenn Powell is right for this. And then you, and then I got it. You know what I mean? Like, I got what he's going for, because like he kind of, Glenn Powell, the person, kind of gives off more of like a Ron vibe. And I was like, well, what is he doing playing this Gary Johnson character? I was like, no, I get it now. This is actually pretty fun.
So a couple things. First off, that Twisters trailer I keep seeing looks pretty fun. Like, I'm looking forward to Twisters.
I'm glad.
It just looks like I just want to see this movie. It just looks enjoyable.
Yeah.
Glenn Powell, like you mentioned, he's getting advice in the right places, making the right kind of moves. He's doing the thing that you, that ideally, you know, budding movie stars should do, which is attaching themselves to a variety of different things to build a kind of audience and making smart choices as far as directors go.
Right.
He's, you know, he's not just doing action movies, doing action, he's doing rom-coms, he's doing comedies, like he's doing a variety of different kinds of films. And that's how you get a big audience. You have people seeing you from all different angles. At the same time, he's working with directors he wants to work with, or stars he wants to work with. He's worked with Tom Cruise, who is a major force in the industry.
Right.
He's worked with, he's where he, Denzel, say he's in The Great Debater. Like, it's like his first movie. He's in The Great Debaters. Like, he worked with Linklater now. Like, he's like, Adam Driver is very similar in that regard, as far as doing the old school tactic of work with all the great directors. And Driver's done it. He's done Scorsese, Spielberg, Coppola. Like, he's done all over the place. So it's like, good on him. Good on Glenn. He has a producing credit for that matter. Like, you know, he's going for it. And yeah, he works here very well at playing these different types of roles. And I want to talk about some of these roles, because there's not a lot to dig into beyond this is just a lot of fun. But it is a lot of fun to see him like take on these different personas that he has to play these different hitmen, whether it's, like I mentioned, the Tilda Swinton one, which floored me because it's just really funny. Or the,
is that your favorite one?
That or the Patrick Bateman
the
one.
The Patrick Bateman one is hands down my favorite. And I was like, this is incredible. And the way that they do these things, I'm going to let you finish here in a second, but the way that they do these things, I'm glad that it wasn't a setup to them. You know what I mean? They just are. You just have to be watching the movie and it just happens. It's not as though he's like watching, there's no clips of American Psycho in the background. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's just, he shows up and I was like, is he doing what I think he's doing? And like, yes, the answer is yes.
So yeah, that's a lot of fun. The hillbilly one I thought was pretty, just because of the elaborate neck tattoo he has to get.
Well, he also like missing some teeth.
There's some good stuff there. But also what also works in those scenes, or a lot of those scenes, or that stuff in general, I think Retta and Sanjay Rao as the two like police officers that are like in the van watching, they're great. They're really funny in this movie. Like, in a film that already has like a good amount of stuff going on, they're like, they really just nail the laughs even harder. Like, it just, it's a very likable cast in that regard.
Right. And it's a pretty small cast, even though they don't get a whole lot of screen time. They are still ostensibly like one of the larger cast members. So it's really fun when they have like the phone conversation and basically they're just like all revealing to each other that they all think that Ron is very handsome and very good looking. And they would all like go date Ron. It's really good. Really good stuff.
Austin Emilio also very good as Jasper.
I was going to say, like, there's actually one more guy too.
As the basically the rival cop, the one that had Gary's job before Gary had it.
I mean, he is the real cop versus Gary, who is like we were saying, a moonlighter.
I said the rival cop. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, yes. That's the job.
But he actually is a police officer. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I presume Gary's an actual. I mean, he has to have something. They can't just throw him out in the field, right?
I think that they just threw him out in the field. Like, I don't
if he's working with the police, surely, like Dexter has like a badge, right?
He's on the forensics team. Yeah, I don't know. I'd be curious to find out. Maybe like a second watch. I have to go give this a shot. It's on Netflix now, anyway. So yeah, but yeah, Austin Emilio, no stranger to Linklater movies. Remember him from Everybody Wants Him? He's he's like one of the pitcher guys.
Yeah. I watched this, then I watched that again, not too long after, because it's just, there's not a bad time to watch that movie. And then I watched this again, actually, when it came on Netflix the other day. It's just a lot of fun to like be in this world, I like that it's in New Orleans without like trying to show you that it's in New Orleans.
Yeah, exactly. They didn't like have like somebody playing
we're not going to Bourbon Street. Like, it's just like a city that has everything other cities do.
Exactly. Yeah. And at first I was thinking that because I didn't recognize the street names that they're showing in the beginning. I was like, well, this might be Austin because Linklater loves shooting in Austin, right? But you later find out that the setting is New Orleans.
He's working for the New Orleans Police Department and all that. So
correct, yeah. I wanted to ask you about Adria? Adria? Yeah. Have you seen this person before?
She's in a lot of things.
She is. Okay.
She's in Morbius, of course. Who could forget?
She is?
I mean, there's only one female character in Morbius. She's it.
Totally don't remember that movie, but yeah.
She's in Michael Bay's Six Underground, of course, as one of the six. She's in Pacific Rim Uprising, Triple Frontier.
Okay, so she's been around. I clearly just have not been paying attention.
The Father of the Bride with Andy Garcia. She's the bride in that movie.
Yeah, I clearly have not been paying attention.
I'm not going to say like she's like been like like I can't wait for her to like really take off or something like that. But no, she's been around for like a good decade.
And I'm glad because I was just thinking to myself, she's great in this movie.
She and Pal are really good together.
They are. Yeah.
And she does hold her own for sure. She's very good in this movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Undeniable. Like she comes onto the screen and you're like, okay, well, she's kind of like playing this messy character. She gets to overact, you know, on purpose at times. And I thought that it was really well done. And even when she is just on screen with Glenn Powell here, again, a lot of good chemistry on the screen, something that I actually would believe. So good on them for that casting choice. And good on Linklater for just being like, yeah, roll with it. I'm sure that there's some things that they were just they shot. You know, Linklater loves to do that kind of shit.
Well, here's the other question I have, because we talk about this movie, you know, delves into identity, obviously, and we're reflecting so much on Glenn Powell's character. But mm-hmm. Madison is a person who, at the beginning of this film, she is playing basically a beat up wife, right? An abused wife who wants to take out.
Yeah, she's definitely in an abusive relationship.
Yes, she wants to take out her husband. Now, it is of Gary's mind that it's less about her wanting to kill this man and more about, I just want to be out of this abusive relationship. So that's why he basically tries to get her out of this and then eventually forms up his own relationship with her. Now, based on where the movie goes, mild spoilers, are we to believe that her identity has always been what the movie eventually leads her down to? Or do you think she changes or evolves based on like her interactions with Ron or just like realizing herself after she's freed herself from her husband?
I think it's more the latter because I think that there is that. I think the abusive relationship is true. And then again, you start picking up on things that she's asking Ron and / Gary about how to do things. And it empowers her, emboldens her. I think one of the lines that I laughed at, which nobody else seemed to because they thought that it was like a serious situation, is when they're walking outside of Club Virgo and Ron says like, apologize, motherfucker, or apologize, asshole. Mm-hmm. And she says the same thing like immediately. And I was like, this is very funny because she gets like this boost of confidence from being with Ron. And I think that it's more the after scenario than what she described, which she actually just becomes much more emboldened by being with Ron and or learning from Ron and trying to kind of take her own life in her own hands.
Now, so I'm asking, do you think that, because the movie itself is posing the idea of not just like making snap decisions or making choices, but like having your entire personality change. Do you think that she's always had this kind of killer persona within her, perhaps? Or do you think she's just legit changed who she is?
So how you started off the whole questioning here, that goes into, was it always in her all the time? And is she just letting it out? And that actually is who she is? Very possible. Like, I actually would not be surprised if that's also kind of like underneath it all. She always has been this person with dark tendencies, right?
I mean, her whole deal is, you know, if she wanted to run out on her husband, she could have done that, but she instead tried to find a hitman to kill him.
Right, yeah. She tried to find a hitman to get rid of him, and then she could live her life, and then is kind of just told, like, just go live your life. Like, it's fine. You can still do that. And so I actually, I don't know the answer to whether it's, I don't think anything's necessarily concretely identified in the movie, but I would kind of guess that she kind of has had that, you know, as to steal a phrase from Dexter, she's had that dark passenger in her the whole time. Yeah, where are you on this?
I agree with you. I think there's something lurking there that the film tries to make evidence, but it's hard to like have an entire read just because, you know, you have so much context to work with.
Yeah. But I'm also glad that they don't actually, again, winkily tell you, like, see, she always was crazy.
I agree. I think the movie, there's a level of restraint in place that I think works well to both keep it, you know, fairly light as a film, but also play with your head as far as where these characters are.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the other question I have. What we're presented with is a character who he poses as this hitman to set these people up, right?
Mm-hmm.
The murders never actually take place because there's not a real murder that's going to happen.
Right.
There's people that are certainly trying to. That reminded me of something like Minority Report, where we're going off of the idea that something could or is presumably going to happen, but doesn't actually happen.
Yep.
The movie, obviously, I think, is siding with Gary. And ultimately, I'm probably siding with Gary. But I do wonder, is there enough there to suggest that maybe he's, I don't want to say part of the problem, but certainly pushing something that wouldn't necessarily happen?
Well, this is a really good question because I think that the movie tries to handle some of this stuff too. I think the movie doesn't necessarily end on a decision, but the movie's kind of asking in these courtroom scenes, isn't this entrapment? Isn't this basically you were trying to get my client to commit to something that they haven't even committed to.
And you sweetened the deal, right? You dressed up with his persona. You wanted him to do this.
Yeah. So aren't you playing the part of the devil on somebody's shoulder to make them act in a way that perhaps they were not going to act? And I think that Ron / Gary on the stand has a really good explanation of this too, which is I was not the catalyst for them to finally make their decision. It might not be premeditated murder necessarily, but it is certainly, maybe it is because they're helping, plotting for somebody to die. But still, Gary has a really good point. He's how could I be the, the final nail in the coffin kind of thing? They've already decided the outcome on their own. I'm just a fringe person that comes into the picture and maybe accelerates this. But I thought that it was a really interesting discussion around that, and not so much that they are saying, Gary's a bad person and this person that he's portraying is bad. I think it's actually a little bit more broader sweeping, maybe not broader, but if you were to go into are there other situations in which police officers will do things that incriminate others just to, meet whatever they need to meet, right? And the answer is probably yes. We've certainly seen situations where their evidence is planted or things happen on security camera closed circuit recordings. Mm-hmm. And you're just a scene was manipulated in some capacity, and that's never a good thing. So I don't know I don't know how Linklater feels about this topic in general, but if you take Jasper as a use case for this too, Jasper's not a good cop, right? He beats up these teenagers.
He's literally the reason Gary is doing his job is because Jasper is suspended for beating up teenagers. Yes.
Yeah, beating up teenagers. It was filmed. People saw it. And also he drinks on the job. He apparently sleeps with some of his informants as well. And it's this guy is an asshole cop.
Gary says he's racist, which
that's right.
I believe.
Gary says he's racist. the cops, even the New Orleans Police Department doesn't really want to deal with this Jasper guy anymore either, right? So going back to your question of does this feel as though it's some sort of, does it feel legally correct or does it feel legally okay for all this to happen? It's I don't know the rules or the laws in New Orleans or in some of those other states, but I'm pretty certain that I when you affix it to the premise that is in the beginning of this movie, which is hitmen don't exist, it's a very fascinating duality, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because if hitmen never existed, which is very true as this movie points out, they're played by people that are working with the police. You actually never meet a hitman. You're meeting somebody who is posing as somebody else. To try and get you to means and end. I don't know. I don't know if this is if this is legal or not, but apparently it is because it seems to have gotten people off the streets as told by the end of the movie here with some of the graphics.
And you're also speaking to how courts work, because it's not just a matter of we arrested them, they're done. They have to go through a process and there is a jury, and the jury decides ultimately whether.
And even in this movie, they show you that sometimes the jury,
they get off.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
So, because I like this angle of discussion, the thought then becomes, so Gary is basically a means to an end. That's his own justification for it. The decision's already made, and he's just there to... Now, do we agree with him? Because he's in a position where, as we literally see, he could talk somebody out of it, or at least attempt to, and not go into the idea of purely wanting them to go after the murder they want, but instead... he's in a position where he can try to talk him down, try to say, hey, maybe take this money, do something else with it or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Is he wrong to not even consider that as an option? Should he only be doing this? If someone has this idea in their head where, like, I need to kill somebody, should Gary... Now, granted, it's not Gary's job to be a therapist.
Right.
But he is in a position... He's basically the one person that would know that this person has murder in their, you know, purview.
Sure.
Should he take that as an opportunity to not provoke them, but instead convince them otherwise?
Again, it's hard to, because I was going to say, well, maybe it's a case by case basis. Like, he is literally doing a case by case basis.
They show us all out. And it's largely done for comedy, but like we see a variety of different people, and they're mostly, I don't say like nasty people, but there's like, you know, some of them are more.
There's some darkness in what they're saying to him.
I mean, they are asking for murders to take place. So, like, ultimately, they're all bad to some degree.
Yeah.
But you do wonder, it's like, you know, could you kick people in a few different directions and maybe they wouldn't want to go through with this thing?
But it's fascinating because I think in almost, not every one of them, but in a lot of discussions, he does say, I kind of need you to confirm everything at the end.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So he's listening to what they're saying. They're almost therapeutically.
He's presenting every opportunity for them to go a different direction and they don't.
Exactly. Yeah. And the final part is like, I need you to confirm what you're saying and give him the money. Right. Mm-hmm. And once that happens, then they're arrested. And I think that it's very ambiguous as to whether this person, a person like a Gary Johnson, would ever even have the ability to whether right or wrong to say like, hey, don't do it. You know what I mean? Like, I think you just need like some help or whatever the case might be. But you know, like I've read cases like this, like in real news, like aside from watching this movie, where you're reading about these people that are plotting like kill their husbands or whatever the case might be. It's like, I don't know. Like, I actually don't think that a person, what Gary says in the courtroom is still rings true, which is I cannot be the ultimate decision maker for what they were planning to do anyway. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I find it pretty interesting for him to just be like, if I wanted to talk you out of something, could I? I think it's much more in the individual, which is why I think they portrayed Madison as this person who has been in this abusive relationship. The other people are not portrayed this way. The other people are just like, I have this personal vendetta against somebody and I want you to kill them, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I just found it all fascinating. And I think that's why the movie stuck with me as well as it has. It's just, it presents these ideas as far as, like I said, it's not just the surface stuff of, hey, fake hitman, that's fun. It's trying to go after something. And yeah, I do think that, you know, for a movie that is a lot of, you know, largely a comedy and, you know, rom-com stuff or what have you.
Yeah.
Those scenes in the courts, like, they're pretty effective. Like, they, you know, they give...
I think Linklater definitely has a perception of law enforcement, for sure. Like,
it's there. Yes.
Yeah. So it's pretty clear, like, I think, like, what side he's on, which very fun to see play out. But yeah, keep going.
Yeah. No, I like that the movie, it has given me the opportunity to think about things in this way.
So. Yeah. You were talking about like the movie and everything else. And I kind of wanted to point out that this movie is also still a noir movie. Like, Linklater subtly puts things in here. But his movie making is really good here. Like, I really dig the way that he shoots some of his scenes. There's one in particular. It's kind of when he first meets Madison. Ron meets Madison, and the way that she enters the restaurant is very noirish, where it's like a bright light, a figure, femme fatale enters screen, right? And then you also see at a different point, you see that there is this like long hallway, like super bright. And it's like, this is very like, again, 1950s crime noir type filmmaking or type scenes that we're seeing here, and very deliberate, you know, especially like the third act where you get into like this weird it's not even a triangle per se. It's kind of just more of like a sticky situation. Mm-hmm. But Linklater knows what he's doing. It's really fun to see it play out. But also, like, while these things are played matter-of-factly and sometimes like without a lot of setup, he's still setting things up too. And again, master of his craft.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. Linklater is a filmmaker I very much admire. I think he makes consistently good efforts, and seeing him tackle something that feels both in his wheelhouse and a little bit out of it, it's like, great. I'm glad that he's able to inject his personality in this as effectively as he does. And yeah, just make it look good. You know, it's a little movie, but it's still an effectively made one.
Yeah. Did you watch this like a bunch of other critics? Yeah.
It's like a mixed company. It was at Netflix, and it's like, so it's a mix of like critics and just like, I guess, random Netflix people or like friends of Netflix. I don't know.
Okay. But no civilians.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I do think there is a level of civilian in there as well. Okay. So, it's people that wanted to see the movie essentially.
Yeah. Okay. No, I was just curious because I was like, yeah, I think that this movie does work pretty well with almost every crowd. But also, there's a semblance of, I could see that it could work well at home too, but I do hope I am bummed that people kind of want to go see, or that it is on Netflix. Like, this is like a strange thing where I kind of defend Netflix. Not that I'm defending them wholly, but this movie was being shopped around and Netflix was just the one that paid the most, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of the bummer of it, is that yes, because Netflix played the most, they kind of limit release things in theaters and it's just playing on a streaming service. But somebody else could have purchased this too, you know? And I think that it went for like $25 million or something like that, right? So
it's a good amount.
It's a good amount, yeah, for sure. Especially for festival service, right?
And for a movie that didn't cost much.
Right, yeah. But again, my point is that I can't really necessarily like poo-poo Netflix on this. It's just that they were they outbid a lot of other people. And so while I do lament that it kind of played in limited theatrical release, there possibly was a scenario in which, you know, Warner Brothers paid like $25 million and 1 cent or whatever, you know, and got the rights to distribute this. So
yeah,
it is what it is.
It is what it is. And it's always going to be a mix of mixed feelings as far as what the ultimate gain is out of where it ends up. That said, I mean, if you want to look at silver linings, Netflix by far has the largest presence in the realm of streaming media.
Streaming,
like,
yeah.
We could talk about the quality of certain things when it comes to Max or Hulu or Peacock or what have you.
Sure.
Netflix is that's like saying Kleenex. Like, it is the one, you know, by easily. And that's also reflected in the numbers. They have the most subscriptions by far. They have the most audience by far. Could they do better as far as how they advertise their things, or could they make serious changes in when they put things into theaters? Absolutely. But for what it's worth, Hitman is it's gonna be about as big as it can in the capacity that's currently in, which is what you can really, really hope for.
Yeah, I would agree. What else? Or is there anything else?
I think we've talked plenty about I don't think we need to delve into anything further. I think
we talked
about the movie plenty. So great. Hitman, go watch it.
It's on streaming. Yeah. Check it out.
Great. Well, that's going to wrap up this bonus episode of Out Now with Her Name. You can find all of our episodes and all the places you can find podcasts. We're everywhere you can find us. You can follow us on all the socials and all that as well. And stay tuned. There's plenty of new episodes coming your way soon enough. Depending on when this releases, our Bad Boys Ride or Die episode should probably be out by now. So check that out for sure. And check out all the other episodes that we're doing covering this summer at the movies. So that's going to do it. So until next time, so long.
And goodbye. Be big chief, I got them fly. Got my spell right by my side. My play for you just